questions, well, last week was actually Vidura's questions to Maitreya, and we've heard the beginning of Maitreya's reply, because Vidura asked Maitreya about the Lord, His incarnations, how He creates, what the nature of the universe is. And Maitreya began his reply by thanking him, because Vidura was interested only in hearing about Krishna, and everything that was to be explained was to be explained in relationship with Krishna. So Maitreya took these questions as a great blessing, because he wished the impetus to always remember Krishna. For a devotee, this is his prime desire, to somehow or another always remember Krishna and to never forget Krishna. So he accepts as favorable those circumstances which help him remember Krishna, and he rejects as unfavorable those situations that pull his mind from the remembrance of Krishna. And that remembrance of Krishna should be done with the greatest amount of affection. Anukulena Krishna Anushilam. This is the cultivation of bhakti. To always remember Krishna and never forget Him. So Maitreya was so happy to receive these questions, and he began to glorify Vidura, his parentage, his forefathers, Vyasadeva, his position as Yamaraj. And then he began his reply as to the how the world is created, which is very similar to the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, in that it begins with the Lord being alone. Aham eva samevagre nanya yat sarasat param. That Krishna is the sarvakarana karanam, the cause of all causes. That in the beginning there is only Krishna, there is no material energy, there is nothing. And then, by Krishna's glance over the material energy which comes, Maya Shakti, then the living entities and time are impregnated within the material energy, and the first thing that is created is this, in this Mahatattva, the first thing that is created is false ego. And by the virtue of this false ego, everything else comes within the realm of matter. How significant is this? If we were not infected with false ego, a false identity of who we are, then practically speaking, we would not be in the material world at all. So it is the false ego, that misconception of ourself as something other than Krishna's servant, that keeps us within the material realm. So after false ego, there are three varieties of false ego that combine: false ego with the mode of goodness, false ego with the mode of passion, and false ego with the mode of ignorance. From false ego in the mode of ignorance, all the gross material elements, the sense object and the senses, they gradually evolve. From false ego in the mode of passion, the intelligence and the knowledge and working senses, knowledge acquiring and working senses, they come. And then from false ego and the mode of goodness, the demigods come, along with the mind. Now, when the demigods are generated, they understood that their business, their service, that they were generated for a particular purpose in relationship to Krishna, because the demigods, they are servants of Krishna. But yet, They did not have the power to do that service. So they began to pray to the Lord for the directions on how to do the service as well as the power to do that service. And their prayers, as we'll hear in these verses today from this 39th text till the end of the chapter 51, are all the prayers of the demigods when they awoke to their consciousness after their being created. These are the Dikpals, actually, the creators of the protectors of the different directions. And their identities are actually explained in other places. But they immediately wished to do their service, because the serving mood was so deeply within them. They wished to do their service, so they began to first offer prayers. So these prayers, there's several parts of them. The first six or seven verses, are the demigods glorifying the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. And then in the two next verses, 44 to 45, they describe who gets the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, because they have described them so sweetly. Who attains the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, and then who doesn't attain the shelter? And then, in the next two verses, the conclusion is that the devotees gain the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. So the next two verses describe or compare the devotees and the jnanis. Because the jnanis, the impersonalists, they are also transcendentalists. But they work so hard. Their process is very difficult, because it is one where the senses cannot be engaged. They have to be fully renounced, because they don't want to engage in any materialistic karma activities, and they don't know about that devotional service is not materialistic. It is not under the realm of the modes of material nature. So they don't want to engage in any activity. So to have senses, to have eyes and ears and nose and the sense of touch, and the ears, eyes, ears, nose, touch, and taste, but not to engage them is so difficult. So difficult. Just try and do nothing. How long will you last? How long can anyone last doing nothing? You immediately start scratching or doing this or that, looking for something to do, looking all around. Then start moving. Finally stand up. So to have the senses, and everyone has senses, and not engage them is practically like torture. So the process of the demigod, of the jnanis, this is described in 46 and 47, the comparison between the process of the devotees and the process of the jnanis, as well as the difference of result. And then in the final verses, 48 and 49, 50 and 51, those verses mostly are the request of the demigods for service. Because service is the gift, it is the offering to Krishna. And the demigods, although they are in the material world, they are not imaginary, as Prabhupada explains. He gives an explanation, some explanation of the demigods in text 38. They're not imaginary, they're devotees, but they have a desire to lord it over the material world to some degree, so that lording it over is used in Krishna's service. So they're not imaginary, they're actually there. And they use their tendency to control in Krishna's service, and because they are devotees, they are given the service of controlling the universe. And devotees, when they deal with the demigods, they are very respectful. They don't see them as separate from Krishna. They see them as Krishna's servants, so therefore they deal very respectfully with the demigods. They are never disrespectful to the demigods, but yet they never consider the demigods the same as Krishna. They don't consider the demigods the supreme, but yet they are very respectful. So the demigods immediately began to offer prayers. So in the 39th verse, they describe the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, how they protect the living entities from misery. The demigods said, Namamate deva padaravindam prapanatapo pasamattapatram yanmulaketa yatayo anjasoru samsara dukkam bahir utsipanti. The demigods said, O Lord, your lotus feet are like an umbrella for the surrendered souls. Why are they? What is the characteristic and the function of an umbrella? What does it do? Yeah. So what is the rain then? In the analogy, the material misery. So when we think of material misery is like rain, it is very interesting. Because sometimes when the rain comes, it rains so heavily it will knock you down. Sometimes it will come lightly. But they fall like rain, out of control basically. So your lotus feet are like an umbrella for the surrendered souls. So the surrendered souls attain the protection of the umbrella of the lotus feet of the Lord. Protecting them from all the miseries of material existence. All the sages under that shelter throw off all material miseries. That means they don't experience material miseries. But they're in the material world. How can they not experience material miseries? When the umbrella is there, still the rain is falling. So how is it that the sages don't experience material miseries? Because this umbrella is not an ordinary umbrella. It is a shelter, it is a consciousness of I am Krishna's servant and Krishna is my master and he's so kindly sending tateno kampam sumikshamano bunjanevapma kripa vabakam ridvagvapovam ladadanam namaste jivate yo muktipade sadayavak. That whatever happens, the sage sees Krishna's mercy in that. And his relationship, his habit of seeing Krishna in everything is so great that he actually doesn't experience miseries as miserable. Just like the cat, when it grabs his kitten within his teeth, and if you've seen a cat's teeth, they are meant for ripping. But when the kitten is being carried by the cat's teeth, he doesn't experience it in a frightening way at all. Rather, he experiences the affection of Mother Cat. In the same way that a rat or a mouse, when he is caught in those same teeth, he experiences the greatest terror. So the teeth, the cause of terror, or the teeth, the cause of feeling affection? That depends on who's on the other end of the teeth and what the experience is and what his consciousness is like. So one in this world can't avoid the rainfall. But whether one sees the rainfall as the cause of misery or the cause of life. Just like the farmer, when it rains, he sees life. And the city folks They see inconvenience from the rain. Oh, it depends on the consciousness. The same rain will be there. But if one makes his conscious Krishna consciousness, by grabbing hold of the umbrella of the lotus feet of the Lord, taking shelter of Krishna, then actually speaking, there is protection from misery. So therefore the demigods say, we therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto your lotus feet. So the Lord's lotus feet give shelter from misery. Why? Because they automatically give knowledge. And knowledge brings detachment. Because if one is trying to control the material world, one is going to be miserable because the material world is guaranteed not to cooperate. It will cooperate for some time, then it won't cooperate, then it will, then it won't, then some big heavy boulder of rain will fall on you or something. And ultimately it will devastate. So knowledge is required. Prabhupada explains in the purport. Everyone who is conditioned by material existence, whether he be man or beast or demigod or bird, must suffer from adhyatmika, that's bodily or mental pains, adhibhautika, pains offered, those offered by other living entities, and adhidaivika pains, those due to supernatural disturbances. His happiness is nothing but a hard struggle to get free from the miseries of conditional life. Just like a person who's going to work on the crowded bus every day. And then when he gets his own car, he feels like something wonderful has happened. But actually, if he didn't have to get on the bus at all or travel at all, that would actually be wonderful. Not the changing of the conveyance. That is not wonderful. So his happiness, a conditioned soul's happiness, is nothing but a hard struggle to get free from the miseries of conditional life. But there is only one way to be rescued, and that is by accepting the shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then it is described, because this verse describes how the lotus feet of the Lord give knowledge. And yet the jnanis think that the source, the cause of getting free from miseries is the acquisition of knowledge. So they say that one has to get knowledge first, and that is the prerequisite to get rid of the miseries. But here, the verse explains that by taking shelter of Krishna, knowledge automatically comes. And from knowledge, detachment will come, as will be described. And Prabhupada in his purport quotes two verses that describes how knowledge comes. Vasudevai bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojita jnaniyatyasu vairagyam. Asu means very quickly. Jnaniyat yasu vairagyam. One very quickly, by rendering devotional service, vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga rokshase prayojita, by rendering devotional service unto the Lord, very quickly knowledge comes. And when knowledge comes, detachment comes. And then Prabhupada also quotes this, tesham satata yuktaram bhajatam priti purvagam dadami buddhiyogam dhamani. Krishna gives, he personally gives the knowledge by which one can come to him. So the lotus feet of the Lord, they award knowledge, they free one from misery. And then in text 41, the lotus feet of the Lord are by themselves the shelter of all places of pilgrimage. Because people go to holy places to get relief from misery, generally. They go and they pray, oh, this problem, this problem, this problem. Please solve the problem. That's why they go. They perform austerities there. They give charity there. But their purpose is to get free from miseries. But the lotus feet of the Lord are themselves the shelter of all places of pilgrimage. It is by the potency of the Lord's shelter that the pilgrimage places have potency. The great clear-minded sages, now listen to this metaphor. The great clear-minded sages, carried by the wings of the Vedas, always search after the nest of your lotus-like face. Some of them surrender to your lotus feet at every step by taking shelter of the best of rivers, the Ganges, which can deliver one from all sinful reactions. So even the sages, when on the wings of the Vedas, they are compared to birds, or actually swans. Prabhupada explains it in the purport. They are compared to swans which want to take shelter of a lotus flower. So the sages, being carried by the wings of the Vedas, because the Vedas give instructions. So where do those instructions carry one? They carry one to the nest of the lotus-like face of the Lord, and then they surrender there to the lotus feet of the Lord. So nest means shelter. So the great sages who study the Vedas, ultimately what do they attain? If they are fortunate, they attain the lotus feet of the Lord as their shelter. And then the third point, there's about the places of pilgrimage and the great sages and their attainment by studying the Vedas. And then finally, your lotus, they attain the shelter of your lotus feet at every step by taking shelter of the best of rivers, the Ganges, which can deliver one from all sinful reactions. So the Ganges emanates. It is holy because it emanates from the lotus feet of Lord Vamandev. So taking shelter of the Ganges is taking shelter of the Lord's lotus feet as well. Prabhupada explains in his purport. We'll just read a little of this. This is the analogy. The Paramhamsas are compared to royal swans who make their nests on the petals of the lotus flower. The Lord's transcendental bodily parts are always compared to the lotus flower, because in the material world, the lotus flower is the last word in beauty. The most beautiful thing in the world is the Vedas, or Bhagavad Gita, because therein knowledge is imparted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. The Paramhamsas make his nest, Paramhamsa makes his nest in the lotus-like face of the Lord, and always seeks shelter at his lotus feet, which are reached by the wings of Vedic wisdom. So the wings of Vedic wisdom carry one to the lotus feet of the Lord. Since the Lord is the original source of all emanations, intelligent persons enlightened by Vedic knowledge seek out the shelter of the Lord, just as birds who leave the nest again search out the nest to take complete rest. Because ultimately we fly all over the material world looking for the worms of our enjoyment. But then ultimately we cannot survive. We need shelter. So we have to go back to the nest from where we came, back to Godhead. 42. So this verse explains about the shelter and that the places of pilgrimage, the Ganges River and the Vedas, they all lead to these lotus feet. Simply by hearing about your lotus feet with eagerness and devotion, and by meditating upon them within the heart, one at once becomes enlightened with knowledge, and on the strength of detachment, one becomes pacified. It's interesting that when people have material desires, they think that to attain their material desires will satisfy them. But when one gets knowledge, one becomes detached. And detachment from matter is what satisfies us. Because as long as we want something in the material world for ourselves, we cannot be happy. Because either we don't have it, that thing, and then we want it, our heart is full of desire and we're not satisfied, or when we have it, we're afraid of losing it, and there again we're not happy, because fear controls the heart. So therefore knowledge teaches us that we are not of this world, that we are Krishna's, and that we don't need material things to make us happy. So then we become detached. And when one gets a different taste who has transcendental knowledge, and detachment from matter comes from that, and then automatically one gets peaceful. And on the strength of detachment, one becomes pacified. We must therefore take shelter of the sanctuary of your lotus feet. So what nice description. So many ways to describe the glories of Krishna's feet there. A sanctuary. What picture comes to your mind when you think of the word sanctuary? What word comes to your mind? Peace. What other words? Huh? Tranquility. Protection. Safety. What else? Huh? A sanctuary is also, when you think of a sanctuary, does it have walls around it? What do you think?
No.
No, what do you think? The one I have does, and they're very high too. It's well fortified. It's well protected. With elves in it, yours have little elves. Okay, maybe you're one of those little elves. That's what I think. To the elves, yes?
Yes, the cortex is very good. Yeah, metaphors and simile, great.
Yes. And here's the purport of this verse about knowledge and detachment, and then peace by taking shelter. The miracles of meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord with eagerness and devotion, are so great that no other process can compare to it. The minds of materialistic persons are so disturbed that it is almost impossible for them to search after the Supreme Truth by personal regulative endeavors. But even such materialistic men, with a little eagerness for hearing about the transcendental name, fame, qualities, etc., can surpass all other methods of attaining knowledge and detachment. The conditioned soul is attached to the bodily conception of the self. What does that mean, the bodily conception of the self? Mr. Elf?
It means identification that you want to really enjoy.
Yeah. But more, yes, that's also there. What does it mean? The bodily conception of the self means when we think of ourselves, we think of this, the matter. And as long as we identify with the body, we cannot be happy. Because the body is being pummeled continuously with desires, with this misery, that misery, needs, longings, aversions. So how can one be peaceful in such a situation? So, and when one is not peaceful, how can one desire the Supreme by personal regulative endeavors? From now on, I'm going to do this. No. But even such materialistic men with a little eagerness for hearing about the transcendental name, fame, qualities, etc., can surpass all other methods of attaining knowledge and detachment. The conditioned soul is attached to the bodily conception of the self, and therefore he is in ignorance. Culture of self-knowledge can bring about detachment from material affection. And without such detachment, there is no meaning to knowledge. The most stubborn attachment for material enjoyment is sex life. One who is attached to sex life is to be understood to be devoid of knowledge, because sex life is centered in the body. Knowledge must be followed by detachment. That is the way of self-realization. These two essentials for self-realization, knowledge and detachment, become manifest very quickly if one performs devotional service to the lotus feet of the Lord. The word dhira is very significant in this connection. A person who is not disturbed, even in the presence of the cause of disturbance, is called dhira. Sri Yamunacharya says, since my heart has been overwhelmed by the devotional service of Lord Krishna, I cannot even think of sex life. And if thoughts of sex come upon me, I at once feel disgust. A devotee of the Lord becomes an elevated dhira by the simple process of meditating in eagerness on the lotus feet of the Lord. Devotional service entails being initiated by a bona fide spiritual master and following his instructions in regard to hearing about the Lord. Such a bona fide spiritual master is accepted by regularly hearing from him about the Lord. The improvement in knowledge and detachment can be perceived by devotees as an actual experience. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu strongly recommended this process of hearing from a bona fide devotee, and by following this process, one can achieve the highest result, conquering all other methods. So this is the process of, this is the best process of knowledge and detachment. May continue. More glorification of lotus feet. O Lord, you assume incarnations for the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the cosmic manifestation. And therefore we all take shelter of your lotus feet, because they always award remembrance and courage to your devotees. The activities of the Lord in his incarnations awards remembrance. Because how, when you can't remember God, Krishna, unless you think about him doing something or looking like something or some quality that he has. How can you, one can't think of a qualityless Lord. And if one tries, if one doesn't understand the personality of Godhead and his pastimes and his activities, and one tries to think of God, one can't, and then one must think about something. So what will one think about? One will think about the world of matter. And if one thinks about the world of matter, one necessarily becomes attracted to it. Jayatam vishyo pungsan sangas tejo pajayate. So therefore Krishna so kindly awards us by his incarnating remembrance, the ability to remember him. And also, and then when we remember him, we become courageous. What is the opposite of courageous? The antonym. If someone is not courageous, what is he? Fearful or cowardly, but not a cowherd, but a coward. So, what makes one a coward? His fearfulness. And what is one afraid of? Ultimately, everyone's afraid of losing something. And ultimately, everyone's afraid of losing the body, death. So if one knows that one's a soul, and one's Krishna's, and Krishna's going to protect, then one won't be afraid. So why, so much glorification of the lotus feet of Krishna, why can't some attain this shelter? O Lord, persons who are entangled by undesirable eagerness for the temporary body and kinsmen, and who are bound by thoughts of mine and I, are unable to see your lotus feet, although your lotus feet are situated within their own bodies. But let us take shelter of your lotus feet. O great Supreme Lord, offensive persons whose internal vision has been too affected by external materialistic activities cannot see your lotus feet, but they, the lotus feet, are seen by your pure devotees whose one and only aim is to transcendentally enjoy your activities. To transcendentally enjoy Krishna's activities means to serve Krishna. So on one hand, if we're going to say this one, there's three hands. On one hand, there's the materialistic people who have attachment, so much attachment in the material world, they can't see Krishna's lotus feet. And then In addition, the offensive persons cannot see Krishna's lotus feet because their internal vision has been afflicted. So Prabhupada in his purport will describe the impersonalists as offensive persons because they think that they ultimately are Krishna. And this is aparad, this is offense. So therefore they don't get the facility to see Krishna's lotus feet. Prabhupada explains in the purport to 44, the whole Vedic philosophy of life is that one should get rid of the material encagement of gross and subtle bodies. It is not that we can enjoy in the material world. We should, the thing that we look at as the source of our enjoyment is actually the source of our miseries. Yet here we are. So we live in the material world and enjoy life in such a way that our attachment to the body and all the accoutrements of the body becomes lessened. Because the goal is that before we die, we have to be detached. Because the gross and subtle bodies, they only cause one to continue in a condemned life of misery. This material body continues as long as one is not detached from the false conception of lording it over the material nature. And that's the cause. We want to squeeze pleasure. The impetus for lording it over the material nature is the sense of mine and I. I am the lord of all that I survey. So many things I possess, and I shall possess more and more. Who can be richer than I in wealth and education? I am the master, and I am God. Who else is there but me? So we don't think of ourselves in God in one sense, in the sense of like, of making the sun rise and the bulbs blossom in the spring, etc., and the rains fall and the creator. We don't think of ourselves as God, but we do think that who else is there but me? Everyone does think like that. We see everyone simply in relationship to us. So in that sense, everyone does think that they're God. I am everything. All these ideas reflect the philosophy of aham mama, the conception that I am everything. Persons conducted by such a conception of life can never get liberation from material bondage. But even a person perpetually condemned to the miseries of material existence, perpetually condemned to the miseries of material existence, if he can get relief from bondage, if he simply agrees to hear only Krishna Katha. In the age of Kali, the process of hearing Krishna Katha is the most effective means to gain release from unwanted family affection and thus find permanent freedom in life. The age of Kali is full of sinful reactions, and people are more and more addicted to the qualities of this age. But simply by hearing and chanting of Krishna Katha, one is sure to go back to Godhead. Therefore, people should be trained to hear only Krishna Katha by all means in order to get relief from all miseries. And then the purport on the next verse about the offenders of the materialists. Such offenders, the materialists and the impersonalists, cannot actually see the lotus feet of the Lord. So on one hand, those who are materially attached can't see. On the other hand, those who are impersonalists, etc., and offend Krishna or his devotees can't see the get the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Such offenders cannot actually see the lotus feet of the Lord within themselves, nor are they even able to see the devotees of the Lord. The devotees of the Lord are so kind that they roam to all places to enlighten people in God consciousness. The offenders, however, lose the chance to receive the Lord's devotees, although the offenseless common man is at once influenced by the devotees' presence. In this connection, there is an interesting story of a hunter in Devarshi Narada. A hunter in the forest, although a great sinner, was not an intentional offender. He was at once influenced by the presence of Narada, and he agreed to take the path of devotion, leaving aside his hearth and home. But the offenders, Nalakuvera and Manigriva, even though living amongst the demigods, had to undergo the punishment of becoming trees in their next life, although by the grace of a devotee they were later delivered by the Lord. Offenders have to wait until they receive the mercy of devotees, and then they can become eligible to see the lotus feet of the Lord within themselves. But due to their offenses and their extreme materialism, they cannot even see the devotees of the Lord. Engaged in external activities, they kill the internal vision. The Lord's devotees, however, do not mind the offenses of the foolish in their many gross and subtle bodily endeavors. The Lord's devotees continue to bestow the blessings of devotion upon all such offenders without hesitation. That is the nature of devotees. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. What is the nature of devotees? Anyone remember? What is the nature of devotees? Preaching, bestowing blessings, forgiving without hesitation. Even offenders, materialists, that is their very nature. What does that mean, that that is their very nature? When we say, that, oh, that's his nature, what do we mean? Yeah, that's who they are. So just see how nice their consciousness is, their hearts are. That is the nature of devotees. So what happens if we read this and think that this is what devotees are like, but somehow or another I'm not quite like that? What inference can we get from that? Yeah, we want to become devotees. But before we can want to become devotees, we have to understand we're only aspiring devotees. Devotee means Vaishnava. Vaishnava means transcendental. It's not easy to be a devotee, a Vaishnava. This is what it means. Now, what do the devotees attain? Because these devotees are those who have attained the lotus feet of the Lord, the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. They are practically speaking not in the material world. O Lord, persons who, because of their serious attitude, attain the stage of enlightened devotional service. What is the cause of their attaining the stage of enlightened devotional service there? Serious attitude. What are they serious about? Service to Krishna. And taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. They attain the stage of enlightened devotional service. They achieve the complete meaning of renunciation and knowledge and attain Vaikuntha Loka in the spiritual sky simply by drinking the nectar of your topics. So the process, because the demigods are explaining this very much as we've heard and will continue to in relationship to what the devotees do, in relationship to what the karmis do, the materialistic personalities do, and what the jnanis do. So the karmis have their material attachments and they get miseries. And the jnanis, they so much want knowledge. That's what it means to be a jnani. You want knowledge and detachment to attain something. So we'll hear the comparison between the process of the devotees and the attainment of the devotees and the process and the attainment of the jnanis. So Prabhupada explains how the devotees go to Vaikuntha Loka and what is their process? Just hearing Krishna Katha and having a very serious attitude about devotional service. So Prabhupada explains in his purport that in spite of his strenuous efforts to attain perfect knowledge, the impersonalist attains merging into the impersonal oneness of the Brahma Jyoti of the Lord. So that is his attainment. Strenuous, he's working so hard. And that attainment is also attained by the enemies of the Lord simply because of their being killed by him. The devotees, however, attain to the highest stage of knowledge and renunciation and achieve the Vaikuntha Lokas, the planets in the spiritual sky. The impersonalist only attain the sky and does not achieve any tangible transcendental bliss, whereas the devotee attains to the planets where real spiritual life prevails. With a serious attitude, the devotee throws away all achievements like so much dust, and he accepts only devotional service, the transcendental culmination, the final spiritual realization, and then the attainment of the jnanis. Others who are pacified by means of transcendental self-realization and have conquered over the modes of nature by dint of strong power and knowledge also enter into you, but for them there is much pain, whereas the devotee simply discharges devotional service and thus feels no such pain. Prabhupada's purport. Although their destinations is not so important, the non-devotees, the jnanis, in comparison to the destination of the devotees, the labor of the non-devotees is far greater than that of the bhaktis, because it is very difficult. They are embodied. Krishna explains this in the 5th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. They are embodied. Transcendental, non-material activity. So therefore they have to refrain from all action. So it is very, very difficult and very, very painful. And yet, as a result of that, what do they attain? They attain only Brahman, which Krishna awards to those who he kills. So it is his enemies whom he kills. He awards that destination, and the devotees get something quite different, quite superior. So one may suggest that there is sufficient labor for the devotees also in the matter of discharging devotional service. But that labor is compared by the enhancement of transcendental pleasure. The devotees derive more transcendental pleasure while engaged continuously in the service of the Lord than when they have no such engagement. In the family combination of a man and a woman, there is much labor and responsibility for both of them. Yet when they are single, they feel more trouble for want of their united activities. So the process is different and the result is different of the jnanis. So what do the devotees do? They hear about Krishna and they engage in his service. So the demigods, as the beginning of this chapter describes, the demigods were created, they came at a particular point by the combination of the mode of goodness and false ego, but yet when they appeared, so to speak, they could not render service. They didn't have the capacity to render service. So as soon as they realized this, they began to offer these prayers, glorifying the lotus feet of the Lord and glorifying the Lord's service. And now they are going to ask for service in 4 verses. O original person, we are therefore but yours only. So there is false ego and there is real ego. Ego means identity. So this is real ego. We are yours. Although we are your creatures, we are born one after another under the influence of the 3 modes of material nature. And for this reason, we are separated in action. In other words, they are still under the modes of material nature, like living entities, like conditioned souls. They are still under it, otherwise they wouldn't be in the material world. But yet, despite the fact that they are under the modes of material nature, which means they're under the influence of Maya, that means they have some desire to enjoy. Still, inside, they are considering themselves as Krishnas. And for this reason, we feel separated from you. Therefore, after the creation, we could not act concertedly for your transcendental pleasure. They are lamenting that they have not been able to serve or act for Krishna's pleasure. O unborn one, please enlighten us regarding the ways and means by which we can offer you enjoyable grains and commodities, so that both we and all the other living entities in the world can maintain ourselves without disturbance and can easily accumulate the necessities of life for both you and ourselves. So they have desires in there, but they're going to the Lord, they're considering themselves the Lord's, but they're depending completely upon Krishna for even their necessities. Prabhupada explains in the last half of the purport. The modern theory that starvation is due to an increase in population is not accepted by the demigods or the devotees of the Lord. The devotees or demigods are fully aware that the Lord can maintain any number of living entities, provided they are conscious of how to eat. If they want to eat like ordinary animals who have no God consciousness, then they must live in starvation, poverty and want, like the jungle animals in the forest. The jungle animals are also maintained by the Lord with their respective foodstuffs, but they are not advanced in God consciousness. Similarly, human beings are provided with food grains, vegetables, fruits, and milk by the grace of the Lord, but it is the duty of the human beings to acknowledge the mercy of the Lord. As a matter of gratitude, they should feel obliged to the Lord for their supply of foodstuffs. And they must first offer him food in sacrifice and then partake of the remnants. Out of what? What is the cause of this offering as described? What feeling? What is the motivation? Gratitude. Yes, Krishna has so kindly given me food. Because without Krishna giving food, no one eats. It's not, as Prabhupada would say, that you can produce nuts and bolts in the factories, but you can't produce nuts and fruits. You can't produce eatables in the factories. So we're dependent on Krishna, Parajanya Nanasambhavad, for the rain, for the food. So thanking Krishna for the air we breathe, well, at least in the category of food, thanking Krishna, we say, Krishna, you've given this to me, you take that and I will take the remnants. That is the motive. In Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed that one who takes foodstuffs after performance of sacrifice eats real food for proper maintenance of the body and soul. But one who cooks for himself and does not perform any sacrifice eats only lumps of sin in the shape of foodstuffs. Such sinful eating can never make one happy or free from scarcity. Famine is not due to an increase in population, as less intelligent economists think. When human society is grateful to the Lord for all his gifts for the maintenance of the living entities, then there is certainly no scarcity or want in society. But when men are unaware of the intrinsic value of such gifts from the Lord, surely they are in want. A person who has no God consciousness may live in opulence for the time being due to his past virtuous acts. But if one forgets his relationship with the Lord, certainly he must await the stage of starvation by the law of the powerful material nature. One cannot escape the vigilance of the powerful material nature unless he leads a God-conscious or devotional life. So this is very heavy admonition to society that Prabhupada is giving. So the next verse, this verse talks about the depending upon the Lord for the necessities, for their food. So in this verse they're saying, they're looking, because they have taken their birth from the Lord, practically speaking, at this point, and they're aware of it. Because he is the creator. So then they start talking about him as their father, practically speaking. You are the original personal founder of all the demigods and the orders of different gradations. So you are the founder of the demigods, like the father of the demigods. You are Pita Maha. Yet you are the oldest and are now unchanged and are unchanged. O Lord, you have no source or superior. You have impregnated the eternal energy with the semen of the total living entities, yet you are unborn. So they're glorifying Krishna as their source. And then here is directly their request for service. O Supreme Self, please give us, who are created in the beginning from the Mahatattva, we've heard how they were created from the Mahatattva already, the total cosmic energy. Give us your kind directions on how we shall act. Kindly award us your perfect knowledge and potency so that we can render you service in the different departments of subsequent creation. So they're saying, please give us the ability to serve you. This is an important mood for those who are conscious of their position in relationship to Krishna. Because service to Krishna is actually done by the internal energy. By Krishna's own energy. He is not pleased by matter offered to him, but he's pleased when his own internal energy is offered to him. So he has to award that internal energy for us to actually be able to serve him properly. I'll read some of the purports. Some of the purport. The Lord creates this material world and impregnates the material energy with the living entities who will act in the material world. And here we are. We sort of wake up at some point in our lives, and here we are in the material world within a body with a particular nature. All these actions of the living, placing the living entity in the material world, they have a divine plan behind them. The plan is to give the conditioned souls who so desire a chance to enjoy sense gratification. So here we are in the material world, we have a chance to enjoy anything that we want. But there is another plan behind the creation to help the living entities realize that they are created for the transcendental sense gratification of the Lord and not for their individual sense gratification. No matter how much we try to enjoy, we will not be able to. Any more than the hand can enjoy independently of putting the food in the mouth. This is the constitutional position of the living entity. The Lord is one without a second. And he expands himself into many for his transcendental pleasure. All the expansions, the Vishnu tattvas, the Jiva tattvas, the Shakti tattvas, the personality of Godhead, the living entities and the different potential energies, they are different offshoots from the same one Supreme Lord. The Jiva tattvas are separated expansions of the Vishnu tattvas, and although there are potential differences between them, they are all meant for the transcendental sense gratification of the Supreme Lord. In other words, there's a difference between us and the Vishnu tattvas in power and potency, but everyone is meant for Krishna's pleasure. Some of the jivas, however, wanted to lord it over the material nature in imitation of the lordship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Regarding when and why such propensities overcame the pure living entities, it can only be explained that the jiva tattvas have infinitesimal independence, and that due to misuse of this independence, some of the living entities have become implicated in the conditions of cosmic creation and are therefore called nityabadas, or eternally conditioned souls. That is the cause. We misuse our independence. We want to see what it's like to try to be God. And therefore we are put in under the control of illusion, and we can imagine that we are so much false ego. The expansions of Vedic wisdom, the expansions of Vedic wisdom also give the Nityavadas, the conditioned living entities, a chance to improve. And those who take advantage of such transcendental knowledge gradually regain their lost consciousness of rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord. The demigods are amongst the conditioned souls who have developed this pure consciousness of service to the Lord, but who at the same time continue to desire to lord it over the material energy. Such mixed consciousness puts a conditioned soul in the position of managing the affairs of this creation. The demigods are entrusted leaders of the conditioned souls. As some of the old prisoners in government jails are entrusted with some responsible work of prison management, so the demigods are improved conditioned souls acting as representatives of the Lord in the material creation. Such demigods are devotees of the Lord in the material world, and when completely free from all material desires to lord it over the material energy, they become pure devotees and have no desire but to serve the Lord. Therefore, any living entity who desires a position in the material world may desire so. They may desire that position in the service of the Lord and may seek power and intelligence from the Lord, as exemplified by the demigods in this particular verse. One cannot do anything unless he is enlightened and empowered by the Lord. So this is the key, actually, to doing nice service, is to remember this point that one cannot do anything unless enlightened and empowered by the Lord. That means keep the constant prayer to Krishna and dependence upon him to do one's service. Then one does one's service very well. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita, Matasmitam Gyanam Aponam Cha, all recollections, knowledge, etc., as well as forgetfulness, are engineered by the Lord who is sitting within the heart of everyone. The intelligent man seeks the help of the Lord, and the Lord helps the sincere devotees engage in his multifarious service. The demigods are entrusted by the Lord to create different species of living entities according to their past deeds. They are herein asking the favor of the Lord for the intelligence and power to carry out their task. Similarly, any conditioned soul may also engage in the service of the Lord under the guidance of an expert spiritual master, and thus gradually become freed from the entanglement of material existence. The spiritual master is the manifested representative of the Lord, and anyone who puts himself under the guidance of a spiritual master and acts accordingly is said to be acting in terms of buddhi yoga, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita, Vyavya Satmika Buddhi Ekeha Kurunandana Bahu Shaka Tanantascha Buddha Vasayinam. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, fifth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Vidura's Talks with Maitreya. So the conclusion of the demigods is, we want to serve you even though we are in the material world, even though we possess some material consciousness, we are your servants, but we know that we cannot do this without you blessing us with the ability to serve you. Vyavya Satmika Buddhi means straight, fixed, one-pointed desire to serve. And that was what the demigods are teaching us by this. So they've glorified the lotus feet of the Lord as the shelter, the protection from all misery and difficulty. They've explained how one attains that, the benefit of attaining that, how one doesn't attain it, that one gets knowledge and detachment automatically. One needs no prerequisite. One needs just to hear Krishna Katha and then engage in some service. And always while serving, be praying to the Lord and begging him for the ability to serve nicely. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
think, or how do we meditate on it? What is meant by feet?
It means the Lord's service. Because the feet, huh? No, it means our serving Him. Because any meditation that we do on Krishna is based on our adopting the mood that we are His servant. Samasitamni parapalavaplavam mahatpanam punyaya shomarari. And if we do that, if we adopt the service of Krishna, naturally we will think about Krishna. And then how we think about Krishna is generally recommended that the thought begins at His feet. In other words, that the lowest part of His body is fully worshipable for us. And that is fully capable, His lotus feet are fully capable of giving us full shelter. His service gives us full shelter and freedom from the material world, etc. So that service mood has to come first. And then gradually the meditation also includes the form, the qualities, and the pastimes of the Lord. But always in the mood of service. Any other questions or comments? Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.